We could stop feeling guilty and bad about everything and clear his mind of the lies he was telling himself and others. At first, his performance actually got worse. He was trying so hard not to think about all the things he was getting rid of that for a while he couldn't think about anything else. But he was determined to work through it, and when I heard him tell his parents he didn't want to be Muhammad Ali, he just wanted to be himself, I knew we'd turn the corner. And his performance reflected that as well. Winning knows the truth, and it needs you to admit it. You can fake a lot of things. You can fake being happy. You can fake being successful. You can fake having a great relationship. You can fake confidence and knowledge and just about everything else. But you can't fake winning. Because even if you can fool absolutely everyone else, you still know the truth. Winning is an absolute. There's a score, a dollar sign, a grade, a number on the scale. Even when your win isn't measured by the numbers, coming back from an injury, starting a new business, having a difficult conversation, getting a promotion, taking a vacation for the first time in years, going down a size in your clothes, there's something tangible that measures your result. It doesn't matter how hard you worked, how many hours you spent at the gym or office, how talented you are, how you sacrificed. Did you win? We have so many ways of lying to ourselves. The score was closer than it looked. The game was closer than the score. The team isn't as bad as its record. We saw some good things. We're headed in the right direction. This is our year. No, the score is the score. The number on the balance sheet is the number. Your grade is your grade. The scale is accurate. You took that vacation, or you stayed home talking about it. For too many people, it's easier to fake success than achieve it. All their energy goes into looking like a winner instead of doing the work to actually be a winner. I see athletes who start every season talking about how they've never been healthier. They've been in the gym every day at 4 a.m. This was the best offseason ever. These are the greatest teammates ever. They're going to win it all. And when they don't win it all, they're the first guys talking about how they're going to win it all the next season. Stop talking. When you accomplish something, winning will do all your talking for you. I'm sure you know people who brag about getting up at 4 a.m. as if that's the trademark of success. For some, it can be. They consistently use that time to be productive and focused, and it's an established part of their winning routine. But for many, it's just another photo op for social media. Let's get it. Gotta beat the sun. This is how you crush the competition. Honestly, every time I hear that, I think two things. Either those people need to find someone who makes them want to stay in bed a little longer, or they're running from something, likely themselves, and they have to get out of bed as early as possible so they can stop staring at the ceiling thinking about all their worries and fears and everything they're faking. Either way, when you're up before dawn and the first thing you do is post a video of your alarm going off at 4:23 a.m., that's not about you focusing on the day. It's about you focusing on everyone else and how you can impress them. Every single day, I get messages and emails from people. Not clients. These are regular people I generally don't know, sending me videos and pictures of themselves working out at 4 a.m. I have no idea why. I assume they're looking for congratulations and you got this. But honestly, who cares if you're in the gym at 4 a.m. or 4 p.m. or any other time? Did you get results? Are you achieving something? Tell me what you accomplished and how it's helping you win. Until then, I just want to tell them to get more sleep. How did sleep deprivation become a symbol of ambition? When did rest become the equivalent of lazy? How did so busy become a symbol of importance? If you can't get enough sleep, it's not a badge of honor. It's a weakness that shows you're not getting enough done during the day. Occasionally, yes, you're going to lose sleep in exchange for a win. But as a lifestyle, as a way to show how important and busy you are, you end up looking like a scatterbrain who can't get your life together. Winning exposes you in every way. Every lie you told yourself and others, everything you faked and flaunted, winning holds it up to the brightest light for everyone to see. It rips your mask off and shows everyone what you knew all along. This ain't that. You haven't won anything yet. If fake it till you make it is your strategy for success, you have very little chance of making it. Does it make you feel good to show off a huge house or car you don't really own or can't afford? If you're really helping others and doing good things in the world, are others talking about the results, or are you the only one talking? Are you proud of the million fake followers you bought? It might get you started, but if you can't back it up soon, you're just a fake who didn't make it. Especially if you're starting to believe what you're selling to everyone else. You already know what you're faking to others. Do you know what you're faking to yourself? Are you honest about your effort and commitment? Are you showing up, not just physically, but 100% mentally? One of the worst motivational expressions ever. Showing up is half the battle. No, showing up is none of the battle. If it's a battle for you to just show up, you're so far from winning you won't find it with a GPS and a team of hunting dogs. Winning demands you show up with purpose and intention and discipline. When someone says, showing up is half the battle, you're looking at an individual who is already losing that battle. I'm not even talking about physically dragging yourself into your workout or your classes or your career. If that's consistently a struggle for you, you're dealing with entry-level issues that have nothing to do with winning. I'm talking about being mentally engaged and focused on what you're doing, not half the time, but all the time. Why? Because winning is going to show up. It's showing up today and tomorrow and every day after that. It shows up regardless of bad moods and bad news and bad weather. It doesn't care what else is going on. It doesn't have to decide whether to show up at 40% or 90%. It doesn't care if you show up at all because you're expendable. If you can't summon the desire and energy to make it, someone else will. Winning shows up ready to play. Your obligation is to meet it there and leave your bullshit excuses behind. It's not the right time. I need to think about it. I'm not ready. It might rain. It's too expensive. Things are too tense at home. Winning doesn't care what you're dealing with. It doesn't care what excuses you can invent. It doesn't want to hear what stopped you and why, whether you had a bad day, whether things are rough at home. Winning isn't interested. It expects you to show up and deal with your problems on your own time. Winning loves a good storm just to see how you'll deal with the high winds and freezing rain and blistering heat all at once, because this storm isn't outside in the street, it's in your head. The sun can be shining and you're lost in a mental blizzard. But you still have to show up. How many times have you not shown up because no one agreed with what you were doing? What haven't you done because you couldn't find a partner and didn't want to ride alone? Every excuse you've come up with, every time you've shown up halfway or not at all, you've slid further and further from what you're chasing. Showing up is in your control in every way. It means being present, physically and mentally, when you'd rather be doing something else. Putting your long-term goals ahead of short-term pleasures and controlling those pleasures for the long run. Staying in the race when you're hurting and struggling. Because one day you won't be able to show up and it won't be your choice. Showing up is knowing that the life we've been given is temporary. Tomorrow is here permanently. So is winning. We are not. Showing up means knowing you have this moment. Not worrying about yesterday, because yesterday isn't worrying about you, and it's not coming to look for you today. Showing up is accepting that everyone struggles, and realizing that everyone means you, because if no one else shows up, it's still your responsibility. Showing up is knowing the day you're about to have isn't the day you planned. few are. Showing up means you're probably showing up alone and preferring it that way. And above all, it means facing reality and embracing the truth about where you are in your life, because winning never lies. But most people do. You may not lie about your age or weight or where you went last night or how many cookies you ate, but to some degree, we all lie to ourselves about something. It's not my place to tell you what you're lying about to yourself, but you probably already know. And until you can stop the bullshit and start dealing with your own reality, you're going to be stuck exactly where you are, pretending you're a fine wine when everyone thinks you're a cork. I'm talking to people who think of themselves as Ferraris when everyone else sees them as scooters. They wear Gucci shoes but have $12 in their pocket until payday. They dress in Armani and tell story after story about the big deals they brokered, without mentioning that those particular deals closed 10 years ago. They've been trying to drop the same 8 pounds for a decade. And the biggest lie of all? I have plenty of time. You don't. None of us do. Winning doesn't buy your lies. It's not impressed. You can tell people and show people whatever you want. Winning knows, and it thinks you're ridiculous. You might be struggling, clawing, and manipulating to stay above ground, but being a fraud won't help you succeed. Your story will crack. Your inconsistencies will show through. And you'll realize, too late, that all the energy you've invested in your imaginary image was spent on the wrong thing. I used to have a huge intern program. I don't run one now, so don't ask. And I'm proud to say that today, many of the individuals who worked for me are among the world's top trainers and coaches in the NBA, NFL, MLB, NHL, collegiate sports, and even in Hollywood. My best interns were the guys who'd come in early, stay late, pick up towels, and do things without being asked or told. They came to us without living arrangements, without other obligations, without any motives except a sincere desire to learn and contribute. On the other hand, we had guys who were just impressed. Impressed with themselves. Impressed to be around the athletes. Impressed by who they knew and how they could use it. They could only stay for a week because they had a vacation planned. They needed us to provide housing. We didn't. They wanted to negotiate their pay. I'd ask them a question and they'd answer, "I guess." "You guess? I don't need you to guess. I can guess on my own. I need you to care enough to find out. You're looking at that phone all day. Can you use it to find the answers I need?" I wanted to grab some of these kids and shake them, lean in, and say, "Are you here to contribute or to see what you can take away? You're telling me what you need, but what are you willing to give? Don't tell me you want to pick my brain or that you can really learn from me. I know that. What can I learn from you? And how can my clients benefit from the fact that I let you in the door?" Those who stayed with us knew exactly what they wanted. They weren't in it for the money or the thrill of being around the superstars. They weren't weighing their options or deciding if the hard work and long hours were worth it. They weren't looking for a plan B. They were already living their plan A. When you're serious about winning, every plan has to be plan A. You don't have the luxury of lying to yourself about all your other options. They don't exist. A few years ago, I spoke to a major college football program and asked the players to share what was going through their minds the night before a big game. Every kid talked about visualizing the plays, getting in the zone, preparing for battle alongside their brothers. Typical pregame pep talk cliches. Then one young man spoke, and I'll never forget what he told his teammates. "I pray that I don't mess up," he said, "because this is all I have. I have no other option. I need to go to the pros. People are counting on me. I'm counting on me." He wasn't thinking about a backup plan. He wasn't considering a plan B. He lived and worked every day to be sure he wouldn't need a plan B. He didn't. He was drafted in the first round, and went on to his next plan A, as a starter in the NFL. That's how winners execute. Too many options equals too many excuses, too many ways to get stuck. Should I do this or that? Maybe this is better? What do you think? You're so busy fabricating options that you can't make a decision. It's a simple choice. You can fail or you can succeed. Pick one. Act on it. I have a corporate client who owns multiple auto dealerships, enjoys good food and good wine, and also struggles to keep his weight under control. When he's out to dinner, he sends me screenshots of menus. "Can I have this?" he asks. He knows not to start with, "Can I substitute this or change that?" He's asking, plain and simple, what can he eat? Prepared how? I give him one answer, and I don't negotiate. You want to lose weight? Here's what you have to do. You don't need the almond-crusted fish with fancy sauce. You can have grilled fish plain. No cookies. No fruit for now. Bananas? He asks. Deep breath from me. I just said no fruit. Drop some weight, and then we'll talk about bananas. When we started together, he said, "I'd like to have more options." "You want options?" I asked. "Okay. You have the option of losing weight or gaining weight. Let me know." The more options you add, the less likely you are to get the desired result. You already know what to do, and then you decide to get creative and start tweaking. I hate tweaking. Tweaking just means, let me see how I can cheat a little here or there, make it a little easier, give myself an out. I already had the right answer, but let me see how I can screw this up. The greats aren't asking for options. They already know the choice, win or don't win. I'm not inflexible. If there's room to adapt and a reason to make small changes, we'll do that. But being tired of grilled fish isn't going to be the reason. For my athletes, sticking with plan A can involve everything from how often they need to get in an ice bath to when and what they can drink. I live in the real world. I'm not telling adults they can't have a drink, but I do ask questions that require them to take a stand. Can you drink the clear tequila instead of the brown tequila? Can you leave out the mixers and syrups? Yes? Okay. The greater the player, the more latitude there is for variations because their abilities will compensate for indulgences. Most players don't qualify. It works the same in the business world with bosses who want to keep their employees happy. These days, I speak to a lot of businesses that want their teams to develop a winning mentality. They want their people to be tough and focused and driven, yet they somehow feel obligated to load up the team with every possible perk and option so everyone is happy. I understand the benefit of creating a certain kind of culture, but let it be a culture that rewards success, not the need for perks. If your people are showing up principally because you have a basketball court and free cookies on Fridays, you have the wrong people around you. Here's my suggestion for every team, organization, and business that wants to keep people honest and accountable. Create a WTF, what the fuck department. The WTF department functions as the in-house BS detector, with total authority to override management and HR and put people in check for whatever they're faking. An employee is complaining to everyone that he deserves a raise and promotion, but his sales are the lowest on the team? WTF will point that out. Someone is upset because she didn't get a pat on the back for doing something she was supposed to do? WTF is there to remind her, you're supposed to do that, it's your job. The boss spends most of his workday making TikTok videos? WTF will be stopping by. Be your own WTF department. Hold yourself accountable. If you're not winning, if you're going to bed every night and waking up the next day hoping things will be better, if you're spending more time creating a false image of yourself as a winner than investing in ways to stop being a loser, it's time to drink up the truth. It will have a very bitter taste, but it will be worth it. Because there's a long race ahead of you, with no end in sight.
This next chapter really blows up a lot of the myths about how much time people have. Don't rush. What's your hurry? You'll get there. You have plenty of time. And your very, very deep personal theory that you just don't have that much time, that every day is a race and every day you have to run it. Can you talk about what people will find in this chapter?
The biggest thing they'll find in this chapter is that they need to stop managing time. The unforgiving race doesn't want you to manage time, because if you manage time, you're not focused. It wants you to manage focus. Manage focus. And when you manage focus, you use all of your time. When you're managing time, you may still get the end result, but it's not going to be the end result you want. If you get in this unforgiving race to win, to get the result you want, manage your focus. Otherwise, you'll never finish this race. You will run out of time.
Fascinating chapter on things I've never heard anyone say before. Let's go.
Number one, winning is not a marathon. It's a sprint with no finish line.
At the beginning of this book, we talked about the language of winning and some of the idiotic expressions that mean nothing, slow you down, and end up knocking you right out of the race. I intentionally saved one of these cliches until now, because it's so wrong and misguided that it's getting its own chapter. It's a marathon, not a sprint. Stop it. I'm sure this means something to someone, because people use it all the time to identify a dramatically challenging long-term journey, a prolonged mission that requires tremendous patience. To me, it's about procrastination, uncertainty, and a total lack of focus. Folks, you don't have that much time. If you want to win, a marathon is a sprint. You want to debate this with me? First, do this. Get on a treadmill and try to run a mile in under 5 minutes. That's a slower pace than the top marathoners would run, but close enough to make a point. They do it for 26.2 miles. I'm asking you for one. Then come back and tell me whether it felt like a marathon or a sprint, if you can still stand up and breathe. You get my point? Competitive marathoners push the entire distance. At no point do they say, it's a marathon, I can take my time here. They may change speeds along the way, but to win a marathon, to even finish near the top, they're going hard for 26.2 miles. And yes, you can finish a marathon without ever sprinting. You can go at your own pace, and it's still a great accomplishment. But we're talking about winning here, not just finishing. Every team finishes the season. Only one will win the title. When people use the marathon / sprint line, they're usually trying to say, pace yourself, you have a long way to go. That may be true, but more likely, it just rationalizes an excuse. Slow down. What's the rush? Take your time. Don't overdo it. Usually, the people who use that line have never run a race of any kind, and certainly not a marathon. They want you to go as slow as they do so they can feel better about their own lack of progress. And while they're taking their time, going slow, pacing out that long marathon, someone else just sprinted past them and grabbed their dream. No matter how long the distance, you have to treat every step as if it's the most important, because it is. In a real race, you don't have the luxury of stopping at the water station for 5 minutes. You run right through it, grab a cup as you go, and keep moving. What the hell does it mean when people say, it's about the journey, not the destination? If you don't care about the destination, why take the journey? Just so you can wander around, dreaming about what might happen if you ever get somewhere? You don't run a race for the journey, you run it to arrive. Whatever you're chasing in life, it's not an option to sit back, skip a few days, Think about it for a month and see how you feel in a year. It means doing it consistently, with purpose and focus, from start to finish. And when you get to the finish, you should already see the next starting gate in front of you. That's how a marathon becomes a series of sprints. Winning has all the time in the world. You don't. Technology, science, communication, transportation, everything in our world is moving faster, and it's not enough to just keep up. You have to move ahead. Maybe you've heard the other dumb expressions along these lines. Rome wasn't built in a day. No, it wasn't. It was built every day for thousands and thousands of days. That's how champions and competitors win. They deliver every day for thousands and thousands of days. How about this one? It's just one game. If that somehow makes you feel better after a loss, you don't deserve to win. It's just one game until you miss the playoffs or lose the season by just one game. Just one game. Just one meeting. Just an idea. Just a mistake. Translation, it's not that important. I have plenty of time. No, you don't. Take out that one little word, just, and the whole meaning changes. It's one game. You're not getting it back. It mattered. It's a meeting. If others are taking the time to participate, contribute something of value. It's an idea. Work with it. Don't overthink it or dismiss it. It's a mistake. Admit it. Own it. Don't repeat it. Winning's unforgiving race doesn't allow you the luxury of shortcuts and procrastination. It wants to see you sprinting. Kobe sprinted through life like no one else I've ever known. He had no hobbies or distractions, didn't play golf, didn't hang out with buddies, didn't go to parties. Occasionally, he'd decide to see a movie and would rent out the whole theater so he could take a small group of friends or family to see it privately, usually twice in a row. Otherwise, he trained. He practiced. He studied film. Besides his beautiful family, which was his top non-basketball priority, his entire focus centered on one obsession: winning. For 20 years in the NBA, Kobe sprinted from season to season, game to game, quarter to quarter. He never slowed down, and he couldn't comprehend those who did. He'd hear about a group of players heading to a concert or a party or another sporting event, and he'd rarely join them. "You go ahead and do that," he thought. "I'll be right here doing this." That was his time to elevate himself, to do the work others weren't doing. He believed the extra work added years of advantage and experience to his skill set. He had no patience for waiting or rebuilding. He began and ended every season the same way, racing toward a championship. Even when he retired in 2016, he kept up the same pace, with new obsessions, and had more wins in his 41 years than most people could accomplish in several lifetimes. A remarkable life with remarkable achievements, which led many to ask, how was he able to achieve so much in the time he was given? Kobe's secret weapon, he had the unfaltering ability to focus on what he was doing for as long as he needed to until he got the results he wanted. Most people worry about how long something will take. Winners just keep going until it gets done. Kobe didn't measure time. He didn't care how long it would take or what else he had to do. He only cared about whether it would contribute to his results. It didn't matter to him if we were in the gym at 3 a.m. or 3 p.m. He didn't know how many years he'd play. He just knew how many rings he wanted. He didn't have a timetable for writing a best-selling book or producing an Oscar-winning film. He just wanted it done. Now. You can't achieve that level of success by wondering how much time you have. You can only focus on the results and keep sprinting toward greatness until you're forced to stop. It took death to make Kobe stop. In the words of Kobe's great friend and mentor, Michael Jordan, "I've never lost a game. I just ran out of time." Most people never think about running out of time. They look ahead and see days and months and years of empty dates on the calendar and assume they have plenty of time to fill them. Kobe's success wasn't the result of managing his time. It was the result of his relentless focus on results. We allow time to dictate so many of our decisions. How long will it take? When is it due? How much time should I put in? It's late, I need to stop. What time does this end? Stop managing time and start managing your focus. Winning doesn't care if you have time. It expects you to make time because nothing is more important. Attaining your dream is about managing results, not managing the clock. I know there are countless books and experts and theories on time management. I understand the value of scheduling and organizing and fighting procrastination. It's a great form of discipline. Of course, if you were more focused, you wouldn't be procrastinating and you'd already be disciplined. Time is undefeated. No matter what you do, it will outlast you, outsmart you, and paralyze you if you allow it to. You can't control it, but you can control its hold on you by controlling your focus on the end result. Think about it. You're working on something that has to be completed by the end of the day. You feel pressure. You're watching the clock. A voice in your head keeps saying, "Come on, come on, what's taking so long?" You have 4 hours left. Next time you look, you have 3 hours left. You've received 7 emails asking when you'll be done. 2 hours left, and you're nowhere near finished. You get up, go to the bathroom, get a snack, check your phone again. Tick, tick, tick. You're stressed and distracted. With an hour left, you're rushing, making mistakes, and taking shortcuts. You know it's not your best work. It might be your worst work ever. But you got it done on time. Congrats. How would this have played out if you were focused on the work instead of how long it was taking? Winning requires results, and results require focus. Turn off your phone. Turn off the TV. Close your door. You don't need to ask 8 people what to do. It's just you and the work now. No distractions, no clock. Focus on what you're doing, not what you're missing. You control everything. And when you're finished, you'll have achieved the results in half the time and doubled the quality. Is it easy? No. Winning never is. But those who can master this type of focus will separate themselves from everyone else in the race. You can practice this, by the way. Start training yourself to experience what focus really feels like. Simple exercise. Do something with the opposite hand. Eat, write, throw a ball, swing a bat, brush your teeth. Something you do all the time that's completely automatic with your dominant hand. You don't think about the mechanics of brushing your teeth. It requires no focus. But try it with the opposite hand. It's awkward and uncomfortable and requires massive focus to execute. You're fighting your brain to stay locked in on this simple task. Can you do it for 30 seconds? A minute? Can you go longer? I'm not comparing wielding your toothbrush to sprinting a marathon, but if you can't control this, how are you going to manage that? Here's another way to retrain your mind. Count up to a deadline, not down. Time forces you to count down to the finish. 5, 4, I have so much left to do. 3, hurry up, I'm running out of time. 2, I'm not going to make it. 1, time's up, the clock ran out. Focus counts up. The numbers are infinite, and the clock never runs out. 1, 2, here's what's ahead to reach the goal. 3, let's get started. 4, stop counting and just do the work. It's not about how much time you have left, it's about how much you can still do in the minutes, hours, weeks, and months that remain. Instead of counting down to the end of the calendar and blowing off December because of holidays and parties and year-end fatigue, Count each and every day that you can still accomplish something before the end of the year, as everyone else checks out. When you count up, you never get to zero, so you never lose momentum. You can start the new year at full strength while everyone else tries to remember where they left off. Time tells you what you didn't accomplish. Focus turns off the clock and directs all your energy to the result. If you're focusing on a time limit, you can't focus on the moment. Time pressure kills performance, if your mind can't block it out. You see this all the time in sports. For example, a quarterback folding under pressure or a basketball player who can't take the last shot. They start counting down in their heads instead of executing. Most players are painfully aware that the clock is running out and they panic. I've got 3 seconds. I got to get this shot off. They're so distracted that they overthink, make careless mistakes, and lose control of the moment. The greats are always in the moment. If MJ or Kobe had 3 seconds on the clock, they weren't thinking, can I do this in 3 seconds? Do I have enough time? They knew exactly what they could accomplish in 3 seconds. Their focus was strictly on getting the job done. 3 seconds? Get me to that spot. I got this. 1. I'm here. 2. I'm there. 3. Basket. Even the score counts up. Focus is the ultimate weapon in the war on time. While time is trying to get in your face, waving its arms and setting off alarms to remind you how late you are, focus takes you to that place where you have no idea how much time has passed and you don't care. Time reminds you how much you didn't get done. Focus locks you in until you finish. Time tells you to stop what you're doing and get some sleep. Focus tells you there's more to do. You can sleep when the job is done. Time pressure is external. Focus comes from inside you, where no one else can control it. Time creates distractions. Focus blocks them out. Time tells you to hurry. Focus tells time to shut the fuck up. When you're managing time, all you can see is how long it will take. When you're managing focus, you don't care. Time is about others. Focus is all about you. Ever been in total focus mode? You start something and realize hours later that you haven't moved, eaten, peed. You have no idea if the earth is still turning. You don't know if it's noon or midnight. You're just locked in on what you're doing. When I'm with an athlete, everything else falls away. I'm not thinking that I also need to go to Costco and walk my dog and answer my email. I'm concentrating on what we're doing and what we need to do next. I might be counting how many steps he's taking, whether he's landing on the right or left foot, how his form holds up when he's fatigued, the smallest details that most overlook. If I'm at one of his games, I'm not taking selfies or walking around the arena shaking hands or posting pictures to show off my seats or what shoes I'm wearing. I'm in my seat, fixated on every moment. I rarely know who's sitting around me, and if you come up to me during a game, I probably won't even notice you standing there. I'm not being rude. My focus is just elsewhere. That carries over into every part of my business. You need me to be in this city or country by tonight? I'll make it happen. You need to change our meeting from 11 a.m. to 11 p.m.? Done. The gym at your hotel is closed? I'll find a new one or work you out in your room if I have to. I don't stop to think, that won't work. I had these plans and that appointment, and it's too complex and... No. When I'm locked in, that's it. Total focus on our results. But that's when most people make excuses. Don't worry about it. Things happen. It's a marathon, not a sprint. Winning is watching, waiting to see if you're willing to settle for that kind of BS. I never settle. When a client shows up a half hour late, although the best of the best are never late, and tells me we won't have enough time, I'll tell him, oh really? You got 25 minutes? Let's go for 25 minutes then. It'll be the most focused 25 minutes of your life. You didn't have time to finish your work? Yes, you did. You just didn't have the focus to finish your work. The time was there. Your head was somewhere else. Focus is about minutes, not hours or days or years. If I need you for 1 hour, you can't lose focus at 59 minutes. After that, you can go watch cartoons or call your broker or find your friends. But for that hour, all 60 minutes, we sprint. MJ's focus began the minute he started his workout in the morning and usually ended when he returned to his hotel or home after a game. For that time, he was centered on what he needed to accomplish in those hours. Nothing was unplanned, and nothing escaped his focus. After that, he could exhale and relax for a short while, until the next day when he started all over again. He knew no other way. That was his direct link to winning. Still is. Many pro athletes received a lesson in focus during the COVID-19 pandemic, when quarantines and precautions meant playing without fans at the games, and in some cases, living in a secure bubble without family or friends. Few could remember the last time they'd played to empty stadiums and arenas. Grade school? The playground? Their entire sporting lives had been filled with parents, friends, family, and eventually hundreds of thousands of screaming fans. Now, for the first time, silence. No one cheering or heckling. No vendors. No tickets to distribute. No worries about where friends or family were sitting. They could hear the sounds of the game. They could hear each other. A completely different experience. Some said it didn't affect their game at all. Some felt that the lack of distraction allowed them to focus more on the game itself, not what was happening on the periphery. Others said that without the crowd buzz, they had a harder time getting into the zone, where your focus is so heightened you can't even explain it. Focus isn't the same as the zone, which we talked about in Relentless. The zone is unconscious. Your skills and expertise are so highly developed that you don't have to think about what you're doing. The action just flows. Focus is highly conscious. It requires you to be sharp and aware of every moment and allows you to work on skills so intently that you eventually no longer have to think about them. You just execute. You can't enter the zone until you've mastered focus. Focus is the training ground. Think about where you are in your life right now. Maybe you feel you haven't done enough, haven't reached your goals. You're disappointed in yourself because you know you could have done more, but something stopped you. You lost your direction, not for a minute or hour, but for a long, long time. That's all about lack of focus. Why do people tend to wait for a loss or disappointment to start focusing? They fail at something, get cut from the team, lose a big sale, don't get the job or the raise, then they want to buckle down. Now they're going to get serious. Everything is going to change. One question: why weren't they already serious? And how many get hit by that disappointment and still don't get focused? Focus is about controlling your behavior so it becomes easier to do the right things and harder to be distracted by the wrong things. I'm not telling you to stay this way 24/7. You need some distractions that will allow you to relax and give your focus a rest. Kids, naps, exercise, vacation. Use that time to energize your focus. But control that time. Choose it. Do it because you want to do it, not because someone demanded it. Obviously, you can't give everything in your life equal focus and dedication, so whatever you choose to focus on, it better be something you want for yourself, not what someone else wants for you. Because it's impossible to focus with sufficient intensity on something you don't really want. How do you know if a goal is worth it? Ask yourself three simple questions. And if the answer to all three isn't yes, winning would like you to move on to something else. 1. Do you want to do it? Is this your idea or someone else's? Is it your dream, or are you doing it to please others? Because you can't just want it, you have to crave it enough to make it your obsession. 2. Can you do it? If you're not able, If you don't have the skill or means to make it happen, all the focus in the world isn't going to deliver the results. You must be realistic about what you're capable of achieving so that you're focusing on something that has at least a chance of working. 3. Is it worth your time? I mean, really, really worth your time? Will it be worth the sacrifice and commitment and relentless grind? Because winning wants all of your attention, not just spare moments when you have nothing else to do. Focus is 100% about you. You're not making dinner plans that you don't have time for. You're not running errands that someone else sent you to do. You're not immediately responding to every text and email and call. You're protecting your mental space and creating control for yourself. Those 24 hours will still be there waiting for you to choose how to use them. Will you use them to win?
This last chapter was probably the most emotional and difficult for us to put together because it's personal to you and it was personal to both of us to capture your ultimate views on winning, on your experiences, on your career, and on your life. Winning is everything, and it's hard to boil that down into a chapter. But you give some incredible advice in this last chapter, and without giving it all away, when people complete their read and their listen of this book, what would you like them to take away with them?
Well, first and foremost, winning does not have a last chapter. It wants you to experience everything. It wants you not only to experience it, it wants you to feel it. Remember, winning is everywhere. Feel that win. Experience that win every day. Do everything. Do everything. Because winning is everything. Number one, winning is everything.
When I started writing this book, I made a list of all the topics I wanted to cover, the things I believe have had the greatest impact on all the winners I've known and watched and experienced. After I finalized that list, the winning 13, I had to laugh about the topics that didn't make the cut. Hard work, commitment, teamwork, leadership, many others, for sure. If you got through this whole book and you're wondering why those things aren't prominently featured, let me assure you, it wasn't an oversight. I wanted to give you more because winning is so much more. Do you really need me to tell you about the importance of hard work and commitment? Like you don't already know that? I didn't want to address the same things everyone else has talked about in thousands of books over and over. If I'm going to write the book on winning, I have to write the book no one else has written, because I've seen and learned too much not to share that with you. Most people deliver the expected. That has never worked for my clients, and it has never worked for me. If you do it like everyone else, you'll be like everyone else. I want you to be so much more. You already know that winning requires hard work and commitment. You already know the importance of teamwork and leadership. Everything you've read in this book is about making those things possible. You can't achieve those things until you understand and use what you've read here. You can't put in the hard work until you can control that battlefield in your mind. Your commitment will only be as strong as your resilience. You won't be an effective teammate until you can get your mind stronger than your feelings. You can't be a great leader without understanding how to think for yourself. People love to talk about a winning attitude, a winning mindset. But what does that actually mean? You can't have that attitude or that mindset without actually experiencing what it means to win. You can't learn it from a podcast or read about it in a book, even this one. You can't win by simply absorbing thoughts about winning. You have to release real energy and perform the action of winning. It won't grow on its own. It needs your investment and commitment. It needs everything to grow. You have to take the risk and the action and feel it. You have to experience everything that actually goes into winning, not just the celebration at the end. If you ever watch a big post-game celebration, I'm talking about a regular season game, not a championship, you'll see that the biggest celebrators usually have the cleanest uniforms. Sometimes, they never even got out of their sweats. Yes, they won. They're part of the team. But until they've felt it all, everything, they can't know what went into getting there. They just can't. Remember earlier in this book when we talked about the combination vault you have to crack in order to access winning? The winning 13 are the first part of the code. But there are many other truths that you can absorb and apply. An infinite number, in fact. And it would take many lifetimes to master even a fraction of them. I told you at the start of this book that each of the 13 is as important as all the others, and that's true. But if I had to pick one that means the most to me, the one that truly sums up what I know about winning, it's this. Winning is everything. Because it is. Every day, in everything you do, your wins are waiting for you. They're everywhere. But they won't wait forever. Stop waiting to be told what you can and can't do. Stop watching others win while you stand on the sidelines wondering when it's going to be your turn. Your turn is now. Long-term goals are great, but long-term isn't promised to anyone. Your skills and opportunities have an expiration date. If you want something, go get it now. I get so frustrated with those who say they want to win, but show no urgency or drive to actually do it, as if they'll have unlimited years and opportunities to figure it out. As if it's just going to happen eventually. To me, a sense of urgency is the ultimate distinction between those who win and those who watch others win. That sense of gotta have it now defined Kobe's spirit. His impatience was legendary. There was always work to be done, and he had zero tolerance for those who wouldn't do it. Every day of his life was about the urgency to win something, anything, everything. As you've heard me say often in this book, the biggest mistake we make in life is thinking we have time. I frequently talked with Kobe about this. How I wish I'd been wrong. Remember him when you think you have plenty of time. I think about it every day. Winners have one fear, and it isn't about losing. They can come back from a loss. They can find another way to win. They fear not having enough time. Not enough days, weeks, months, and years to complete their life's work. Not having everything in place. Not accomplishing everything they dreamed of. Not finishing. Most people accept that they won't get to do everything in their lifetime. Winners can't accept that. They need to finish everything. Because ultimately, winning is immortality. It's your legacy, the culmination of what you've accomplished, what you've built, what you contributed. It's the sum of how you touch those around you, the memories you leave with them, what you've done for others and for yourself. And if you've been successful in your race to greatness, at the end of your life, winning will embrace you, erase your losses, and keep you forever in its hall of fame. Death puts you in winning's elite club of greatness, where nothing can ever change what you accomplished. Everything you've achieved stays with you. Your race is done. People say winning makes them feel alive, and it does, but it also brings you closer to life's end. Because the longer it takes to capture your wins, the less time you have to enjoy them, or repeat them, or learn from them. That's the unforgiving race. Every day, your time grows shorter. When I was in college, I had hanging over my bed a basketball net with a ball in it. It was an award for making a game-winning shot. I used to lay in bed and look at that net and think about how I learned to play without one. We had a rusty hoop on the broken concrete playground. That was all I ever needed, a ball and a hoop. A net. I thought it was for show. A net slows things down as the ball moves through it, so as a kid, I always felt the ball come at me fast and hard. Ironically, that ball over my bed was never used, never allowed to do what it was meant to do, bounce, roll, fly through the air. Over the years, the net continued to hold it there, immobilized. That's what nets do. Trap you, hold you in one place, protect you, sometimes from others, sometimes from yourself. We all have nets that keep us from doing what we're meant to do. Don't let that happen to you. Do everything. Experience everything. Experiment and wonder and dream and make it all happen. Winners welcome all experiences because they never know which will take them to the next level. I'm not telling you to find balance where you take on a million things that don't help your goals. I'm suggesting you embrace possibility and hope and new ways to learn and think. I'm telling you to dance like nobody's watching, even when they are, to let go and let loose just because you want to. Not for anyone else, but for yourself. Winners know they're going to lose time, friends, money, courage, and strength, but they never lose belief in themselves because they're driven to win. They can't accept the alternative. Most people will encourage you to settle for less. They'll tell you, you've done everything you can do, so relax, take it easy, don't take everything so seriously. Winners wage war against that every day, a relentless campaign against unhappiness, weakness, laziness. What is your daily campaign? How do you repel temptation and doubt? What is your campaign against the urge to just give up? Let's go is not a campaign. Crushing it is not a campaign. Everyone who has finished something has one thing in common, the urge to quit. There's not a winner out there who hasn't thought about quitting at some point. You can't make the commitment to win until you've tasted the urge to quit. We're all weak sometimes, and we all have the urge to give up. It would be so easy, so quiet, so calm, to just stop the craziness and intensity and pressure and be normal, like everyone else. Normal, like everyone else. No thanks. You may not win at everything. Everyone comes up short in some way. You can't be the strongest person in the world and the fastest and the smartest and the richest. You won't dominate everything. You won't win everything. But you will win. Explore and embrace your weaknesses. Only then can you let go of the fears and inhibitions that hold you back from everything you want. Drive yourself through those boundaries until you find the thing that excites you and takes you to where you want to go. Winning is everywhere, like the song that gets stuck in your head that goes around and around and you can't make it stop. Don't stop. Keep going. Every day, keep going. The pursuit of winning has defined my life. My desire for it hasn't been about financial gain or fame or access to the greatest winners of our time. For me, it has always been about the indescribable rush of satisfaction and pride and sweetness that comes with every win, every time. The high is so high you can only get it from the black market in your head, the darkest place in your mind. Unfortunately, that rush doesn't last. We make all these down payments in energy, focus, and preparation so we can someday own the luxury of winning. But winning can't be owned. We can only rent it, and no matter how much we pay, winning is still going to change the locks at some point until we start paying all over again. How can we not keep paying? We don't know anything else. We don't want to know anything else. Tell us the price. We'll pay it. Please. My pursuit of winning has given me so much, yet it has also cost me much. My health, relationships, family. When I felt pain, physically or emotionally, I never backed away from it. I never stepped out of the race I was running. Instead, I conditioned myself to power through it all, sometimes to protect those I love, sometimes to protect myself. I have no problem being a life jacket for others, but have a hard time allowing anyone to save me. I could have changed direction any time along the way. But it's not who I am, and not for a minute do I regret any of it. In the final days of my dad's life, he told me the family was now my responsibility. I told him, with the broken heart of a man about to lose his father, that I wasn't as strong as he was. "You're right," he said. "You're stronger." I live every day trying to prove him right. Strength comes in many disguises. Yes, it means being relentless and resilient and holding up others when you can barely hold up yourself. But there's more to it than showing power and control. It means having the ability to laugh at yourself and see your own flaws. It's the confidence to walk away when it's time and not look back at what you left behind. It's showing emotion when you feel it and not faking it when you don't. It's sharing your wins with those who rode along with you, who never left your side and never will. If you're blessed or fortunate enough to find that person, you've found something as rare as winning itself. If you watched The Last Dance, you may have seen me become visibly emotional at one point, talking about Michael's commitment to himself, to the fans, to always delivering his best. I never forget what he gave of himself in those years, what he carried on his shoulders and in his heart. It was intense back then, and the memory of it remains intense for me today. What you didn't see was what came after that. The director, Jason Hare, asked me, "Why the emotion?" I couldn't even speak for a very long moment, and then finally I was able to answer in words I'd never spoken. "He took a chance on me," I told him. "He gave an opportunity to a kid he didn't even know, and allowed me to run with him in his race to greatness for 15 years. Aside from my parents, no one has had a greater impact on my life, and I'll never be able to express my gratitude for his belief in me." We were young men then, and it has been my great pride and pleasure to watch him and all the great athletes who have trusted me with their careers grow into the next stage of his life, still looking for things to win. From young men, they've grown into fathers and grandfathers. From basketball players, they've matured into cultural icons and entrepreneurs and business moguls and broadcasters. I've been blessed beyond description to be in their lives and to have them in mine. I love seeing MJ have the freedom to throw his golf clubs into a different automobile every morning, run his businesses, and enjoy his life as a father of five with a beautiful grandbaby. I love seeing Dwayne surrounded by his family and the pride he takes in his beautiful children, raising them with the freedom to express themselves and be who they really are without prejudice or judgment. I love watching Charles be Charles on the air, telling it like it is and shaking things up the same way he played. I'll never stop wondering what Kobe would have achieved. The world deserved so much more of his brilliance and greatness. He deserves so much more of everything. But I know he and his baby Gianna are together at winning's head table, laughing at the rest of us, and finding new wins every day. MJ opened the door for me. I was able to open it for others who gave me their trust, including not just clients, but young trainers eager to learn the business. So when others call me the godfather, the guru of what I do, I'm humbled and proud. That's winning to me, the ability to empower others to do what I've done. I began this book by talking about the hardship and endurance and sacrifice that go into winning. Uncivilized, hard, nasty, unpolished, dirty, rough, unforgiving, unapologetic, uninhibited. That's the reality of racing toward a destination that will do everything possible to make sure you never arrive. It's tough and unforgiving, and it's supposed to be. But at the end, and even along the way, there is joy. There must always be joy. No matter how intense and competitive and driven you may be, don't shut out the opportunity to be in the moment, to embrace what you have, and hold on to it for as long as you can. Take time in your life for true fun and happiness and joy and laughter wherever you can find it. It doesn't make you weak to enjoy your life and appreciate the things that give you satisfaction and a sense of accomplishment. For me, Those things aren't necessarily the championships or rings. Some of my greatest achievements have involved seeing the joy in my clients' eyes after performing at an entirely new level. Knowing I made my parents proud. Speaking to an audience and seeing them get it. Working with my down and dirty mentoring groups and hearing about their wins over and over. Remaining authentic and true to who I am. Staying true to those I love and who love me unconditionally. And above all, being a dad. Whatever you dream for yourself, whatever you're chasing, stay with it. Believe in it. Fight for it like your life depends on it, because it does. Winning is watching. It's waiting for you at the finish line with a message. Welcome. The race is over. The price has been paid. For now.
Winning, The Unforgiving Race to Greatness, was written by Tim S. Grover with Sherry Lesser Wenk and read by Pete Simonelli, featuring dialogue with the authors. It was recorded by Mike Manolia at Octane Rich Media in Chicago. Editing, mix, and post-production by like 2,000 pounds. Tiffany Ferrari was the associate producer. Winning was produced and directed by Travis Kunn. This has been a presentation of Simon & Schuster Audio. Winning, The Unforgiving Race to Greatness, is available in print from Scribner Books. Also available from Simon & Schuster Audio. Relentless, From Good to Great to Unstoppable, written by Tim S. Grover with Sherry Lesser Wenk and read by Pete Simonelli, featuring dialogue with the authors.
Audible hopes you have enjoyed this program.